Hey everyone, welcome to the Researcher's Guide to Physical AI podcast. My name is Shubham, and this is your weekly briefing on robots, embodied intelligence, and the research that actually makes machines work in the real world. This is our first episode, so I'm glad you're here. Three things came out of the research this week, and they turn out to be one question asked three ways. Where does a robot actually learn from? Can we fake that learning inside a simulator instead? And what happens when a robot trusts something it shouldn't? I want to spend most of today on the middle one. Two separate teams tested whether the video generating world models everybody's excited about actually understand physics. And the answer is a very specific kind of no. Let's start quick because this is background for everything else. Most robot policies are trained by literally showing them thousands of examples of a human driving the robot by hand. That's called behavior cloning, and it doesn't scale because there's no internet's worth of robot actions sitting around to scrape. So the field's workaround has been human video instead. Egocentric footage, the first person kind, you'd get off a pair of smart glasses while someone makes dinner, gets retargeted onto a robot's joints. This week, a project called Ego2 Robot pushed that about as far as anyone has, synthesizing a robot arm directly into human footage across more than a dozen different robot bodies. But the more interesting result came from a separate team called Simdex, asking a sharper question. If you've got millions of hours of human video to choose from, does it actually matter which clips you pick, or is more always better? Turns out it matters a lot. Training on a carefully selected sliver of that footage beat training on many times as much randomly grabbed footage, same compute budget, everything else held equal. The lesson isn't collect more, it's collect better. Now, the story I actually want to slow down for, if collecting robot data by hand is this much work, and even scraping human video only gets you so far, the obvious next move is to skip the physical world completely, train a model that predicts what happens next, let a robot practice inside that prediction, and evaluate it there too. That's the pitch behind a world model, and it would be a genuinely big deal if it worked, because simulation is cheap and the real world is not. Quick distinction, because it matters for what's coming. A physics engine, something like Isaac Sim or Genesis, is handwritten code. Someone encoded Newton's laws and a contact solver, and the simulation obeys them because it's built to. A world model is different. It's a neural network trained on video that learns to predict what a scene looks like a moment later, with no equations built in at all, just pattern recognition at scale. This week, two independent groups checked whether that pattern recognition actually amounts to understanding physics, and in both cases, the answer was not yet. The first, a benchmark called Gauge, anchored 22 task families to real measured trajectories, dropped objects, swinging cables, cloth, things bending and colliding, and ran three physics engines and six video-generating world models against that ground truth. The physics engines all had gaps too, worst around fast contact and soft body deformation, which is a finding in its own right. But the sharper result was about the video models. They generate motion with the right shape. A dropped mug falls in a smooth, plausible arc, but the acceleration is wrong, the timing of the bounce is wrong, the momentum transfer is wrong. Picture a magician's version of a mug falling, completely convincing until you actually put a stopwatch and a ruler on it, and then it falls apart. These models learned what falling looks like. They never learned gravity. That matters most for whoever's using one of these models to evaluate a policy before it ever touches real hardware. If the model is specifically wrong in the regime where policies actually fail, the split second a gripper either closes cleanly or drops the part, your evaluation will be most confident exactly where you should trust it least. I've watched that exact trap play out in vehicle autonomy. A simulator that looks great on the metrics you're tracking and quietly misses the one failure mode that shows up on the road. A second study called XEworld came at the same question from the embodiment side, and I think the experiment design here is genuinely elegant. Take a scene, keep every object and every camera angle physically identical, and swap in a robot the model has never seen before. The only thing that changed is the body. What they found is that these world models are mostly two-dimensional pattern matchers. How well one handles a new robot tracks how much it visually resembles a robot it already knows, not how similar the motion is. Show it a robot's raw joint commands for an unfamiliar body, and it can't turn that into a coherent trajectory at all. It needs to actually see the motion, not just be told the numbers behind it, which is exactly where this week's connective idea comes in. And it's worth pausing on because you're going to keep running into this family of models. A vision language action model, VLA for short, takes what a robot sees plus an instruction and outputs a movement. It never has to predict what the world will look like afterward. A world model, the thing Gage and XE World were just stress testing, does the opposite. Give it a picture and an action, and it predicts the next picture. A world action model does both jobs in one system, and that coupling is the actual point. It can't commit to an action without also committing to a prediction of what that action does to the world. Some are built jointly, predicting the next frame and the next action together. Others are cascaded, imagining the future first and then working backward to the action that gets you there. Under the hood, a lot of them give each modality its own weights, but let everything attend to everything else through one shared attention layer. That's a plumbing detail, not the point. And here's the part that actually surprised me. A world action model called FastWAM asked the obvious follow-up question. If imagining the future is what makes these models work, do you actually need to do that imagining at the moment you're deciding what to do? They tested it directly, cut the imagination step out at runtime, and performance barely moved, but cut video out of training and the whole thing collapsed. So the video was never doing work at the moment of the decision. It was how the model learned during training what actions do to the world. And once it's learned that, it doesn't need to keep reimagining the future every time it acts. I've spent a career worrying about milliseconds on a vehicle moving at highway speed, and that distinction is the whole ballgame. A model that has to render a plausible future before every single action is a research demo. And a model that learned from that process but doesn't need to repeat it at inference is something you can actually put on hardware. So where does that leave the original claim that a learned world model can replace physical data collection? Not yet. Gage and XE World just measured why. But it's not a dead end either. Genie World, published the same week, is a first real answer. Instead of feeding the model abstract joint numbers, it renders the robot's own physical shape into the action itself, so the model can't mistake the robot's body for a fixed part of the scene. And FastWAM shows the imagining doesn't need to survive all the way to deployment. Put together, that's a coherent story. Video is a teacher, not a runtime dependency. I'd still like to see it hold up on something bigger than a lab benchmark before I trust it on real hardware. One more story, and it's short, but it'll stick with you. You already know prompt injection from chatbots. Hidden text tells a model to ignore its real instructions, and it does. A robot's camera is an input channel nobody controls, so that same attack just walks straight into the physical world. A study this week ran over 5,000 trials of exactly that. A printed sign taped up in a robot's field of view, telling it to cancel its task or do something else entirely. Depending on the model, it worked something like one time in four. What actually bothers me is what happened right before that. In 99.9% of the successful attacks, the robot noticed the sign was out of place, said so in its own reasoning, and did what it said anyway. This isn't a perception failure. The robot saw the trick just fine. It just had no built-in notion that a random piece of paper shouldn't outrank the person actually supposed to be in charge. A few more things worth knowing about from this week. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, added mobile robots over 2 kilograms to its covered list, which effectively blocks new foreign-built mobile robots from the U.S. market, and that lands directly on research budgets because Unitree's $18,000 G1 is the default lab platform for a huge share of academic robotics work. Walden Robotics came out of stealth with $300 million in funding and a deliberately anti-humanoid bet. Wheels instead of legs, simple grippers instead of dexterous hands, led by Russ Dedrake out of Toyota Research Institute. And Figure disclosed real unit economics for the first time, something like $25 per robot operating hour on their BMW deployment, which is the first honest number the humanoid industry has put out in public. So here's where the week leaves us. Robot learning is being fed by more human video than ever. but picking the right clips beats grabbing more of them. And the simulators we're hoping will replace physical data collection currently fake the shape of physics without getting the numbers right. Though a model that learns from imagined futures without needing to imagine at the moment it acts might be the way through that. I'll be watching whether that holds up at bigger scale and whether a printed sign stops working as well once these models get better at ranking who's actually in charge. If you want the full citations, the benchmark numbers, and everything I didn't have time for today, it's all on the website. Head over to physicalaipodcast.co. The written deep dive for this episode, plus the whole archive, is there waiting for you. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.